we have a special opportunity this morning to look at the Haftorah for Noach, because in this case particularly, it's always the case that the Haftorah, when it does align with the Parsha and is not replaced by something else, that the Haftorah can give us some kind of insight into the Parsha, because it reflects something about what Chazal understood as a theme in the Parsha that they extended into the Haftorah. But it's perhaps especially true when it comes to Parshas Noach, that there is a very significant role the Haftorah can play in helping us to understand just how we look at Noach himself and how Chazal looked at Noach, and perhaps fill in a very subtle way an important part of the story. And it has to do with a very complicated PR that Noach has. Noach has a very strange public image issue, because on the one hand, you would think he's got it great. He's got a parsha named after him. It's the first one that's named after someone. It's not even one of the bad ones, like Balak. He's not the villain of the parsha. So it's clearly a coven. And everything that we read about him sounds great. What does the Torah tell about us? It's that tzaddik, tamim b'dorosav, that he walked with God, that he was matzachim, that he found favor in God's eyes, that he was a tzaddik, it says again. So if you add up all these parts, you'd think Noach's doing pretty well. You'd think this is a great recommendation letter. This is a great resume. And yet, for some reason, when we get into the words of Chazal, they knock everything down. Right? Every positive statement that you find about Noach somehow turns into a negative. Right? So the most well-known, we know, Rashi quotes the idea of what's the Torah telling us when it says B'tarosav, Yesh Darshan L'Shvach and Yesh Darshan L'Gnai, that even at the same time as we might think, okay, that's pretty good, the whole rest of the world is deserving of death and this guy's a tzaddik, that's a shvach, that's a praise. And yet, we find Chazal tell us, as Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Kuf Ches that Rashi was quoting, that not so fast, that maybe it's meant to make a relative statement, that yeah, by the standards of this group of people who deserve to be wiped out by a flood, okay, he was a relative tzaddik. But compared to Avram Avinu who's coming down the pike, that's a real tzaddik. And Noah, compared to that, was not a tzaddik, or Rashi has the language even stronger, he would have been nothing. He would have been nothing in the days of Avram Avinu. And all of these phrases we find as understood by Chazal as something negative, even though they all seem to us to be such great things, but Chazal saw them all negatively. So, for example, the idea of Matzachein, Noah found favor in God's eyes. Okay, sounds good. And then you see the Gemara tells us, you see Chazal say, yeah, you know what that means? It means that he also should have drowned. But he was lucky. God liked him. He was cute. There was something about him that appealed, and therefore he survived. Even the idea of walking with God is sometimes interpreted in a negative sense, that yeah, he couldn't walk on his own. He needed help. So what's pshat? How does Noach, you read the psukim, you read the Torah Shebichsav, and Noach has got the best endorsements you could ever want, and then you read the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and everything is at best mixed. At best, it's a so-so. So what's pshat? Is there any hint in the Torah Shebichsav that maybe Noach didn't deserve as great of the Yashikoach, which rhymes with Noach? Sorry? So there are explanations, but the question is, again, where do you see that in the Torah Shebichsav? Right? The Torah Shebaal Peh, we have Chazal piling up on him, but in the Psukim, where do you find Psukim that are critical?
The absence of something in the Pasuk, because there is no instance of him. You know.
Okay, but again, but then in terms of judgment, so you're saying, well, a person is called a tzaddik, a tamei matzochein. Ah, it seems like they're leaving out something. It seems like they're trying to say there's a big but coming. So, you know, what exactly can you see from the psukim that don't favor him so much?
Getting drunk at the end.
Okay, but again, that's an action, right? But in terms of a judgment, anywhere the Torah is saying that, you know, we're not as happy with Noah as it sounds like, so therefore take a clue to interpret all the comments in a less glowing way. The rare place where you find that, in terms of psukim, well, that's again the question: what does Ladarasav meant? You know, how did, where did Chazal see that that word should be read negatively when, as they themselves say, it could have just as easily been read positively? So perhaps the answer really is, if you want to find a pasuk that implies something negative about Noach, it's in the Haftorah. And here the Haftorah is really able to be helpful for us in understanding what's going on. This is a familiar Haftorah in a lot of ways, from a very recent past, because we read it over the summer. Twice, I mean, the parts of it, it's made up of two different parts. So the first part of the Haftorah in the Ashkenazi practice, the first part is the Haftorah for Kiseitse, it's not so long ago, and the second part is the Haftorah for Parshas Re'eh. It's all from the words of Yeshaya HaNavi, and they're recent, and so they'll be familiar. But there is a line here which gets some commentary. In Perek Nandalet of Sefer Yeshaya and Pasuk Tes, so says the Navi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is declaring regarding the future here, Kimei Noach Zosli. Asher Nishbaiti Me'avor Mei Noach, Ora Ha'aretz, Kei Nishbaiti Mikseif Alayich Amigor Bach. That God is saying, just like he took a Shvua in Parshas Noach, so too he is swearing for the future of the Jewish people. So this phrase in the beginning of the pasuk, Mei Noach, this is like the waters of Noach. That seems like an inappropriate name for the flood. What would be a more appropriate name for the flood? Sorry? Okay. Or essentially, right, or essentially the waters of everyone but Noach. Right? So here Noach is the one, together with his family, these are the only people in the world who aren't flooded. These are the only people who are saved from the flood. And we're naming the flood after him. We're naming the flood Mei Noach. It seems like the opposite of the correct choice. Now, you should point out that the Radak, as if you look in the Radak's commentary, he has a slight nuance that could have made a difference, that it could be this, these opening words, Ki Mei Noach, should be read as Ki Yimei Noach, like the days of Noach, which softens it a drop, no pun intended, because, all right, so it's not that we're blaming the flood on him, we're saying like the days of him, the era of Noach, but then again, a few words later, it comes up again as Mei Noach, so it's very, 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 very minor in terms of making a difference here, but just to note, the Radak does have that comment. So, what's going on? Why is Noach named after the flood? Or I guess the other way around. Why is the flood named after Noach? And here, many point to the Zohar, which is what a little bit what Sam was alluding to before. And again, this is where you see the hint of it in the Psukim, that associate the flood with Noach is to suggest that yes, Noach and his family survived, but he's not totally innocent here. And that to some extent, he deserves some blame or some criticism that connects to the flood. And there's a Zohar that really expresses this. The Zohar makes the negative comparison from Noach to Avram to Moshe Rabbeinu. Because if you look, here are three individuals who are all told that another group of people are going to be destroyed. So Noach is told that the world's going to be flooded. What does he do? He goes, okay, so tell me what to do for myself. Essentially, he follows the instructions how to save himself. Avram is told that Sodom is going to be destroyed and he's going to be okay. So he doesn't let himself be satisfied with the fact that he's going to be okay, but he davens on behalf of the people of Sodom. So that's a big step beyond what Noach did. And then you look at Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu did more than Avram, because when Moshe is told that the Jews are now in danger following the Chet HaEgel, but Moshe, don't worry, you'll be your own nation. How does Moshe respond? Not only does he advocate on their behalf, but he says, wipe me out. He says, Mecheini na misifrecha asher kasavta. He says, I am so concerned on their behalf that you should wipe me out. That you should get rid of me if you're going to get rid of them. Now, building off of the Zohar, there is, for those who are inclined in this direction, there is a fascinating comment of the Arizal, who notes that if you take the words of Mecheni and you move them around, guess what you get? Kimei Noach. It's the same letters, Mei Noach, Mecheni. If you move them around, and that essentially one is the kapara for the other, that this attitude that's being criticized by our Haftorah, the Mei Noach attitude, which suggests that Noach was lacking, so that is corrected through Moshe Rabbeinu's attitude of Mechenina. That not only do I worry about everyone else, but I'm even ready to sacrifice myself. Now, we should point out that the notion that's kind of portrayed here of Noach as not caring, of just letting it happen, it's not totally fair, because we do have sources that indicate that Noach really did try to make a difference on them and the people around him, and that that's why it took so long to build the Teva, that it allowed for people to come and to ask what's going on, and Noach was able to explain to them that there's bad stuff coming and he has to they have to do tshuva. So it doesn't sound like he was completely uninvolved in trying to make a difference. Although the Medrash says that the language maybe is a little different, not that he didn't try, but he was not able to. He didn't have the ability. Now, whether that means he didn't establish the relationships where he could have made a difference, or whether that means that he wasn't on a level in terms of his personal stature where he could have had an impact, but one way or another, there's a criticism here slightly shifted that maybe it's true that there was some kind of an effort to impact others, but he was not up to the job. He was not able to have any kind of an impact. So take this question a little further. What exactly is going on in the character of Noach? So maybe we could look at him as an individual for another minute here. And as we noted before, so the Torah tells us, in what sounds like a positive, but the Chazal portray as a negative, that Noach motza chen, that Noach somehow was on God's good side, and he found favor. So what attribute did he have that allowed him to win over God, that gave him this special favor? And there are a couple of theories. If you look at the Svarim, written on Parshas Noach and elsewhere, so you can find, Rav Asher Weiss has an essay about this in his Sefer on Chumash, and Rav Simcha Zissel Broyd in the Sam Darach. Yeah, there are various suggestions whether this has to do with the idea that Noach learned Torah, or whether it has to do with a certain anivus, with a humility that he had. There are various suggestions what to point to as Noach's special winnable trait, winning trait. But it's possible maybe to focus on one, and that is a disinclination to get angry. Now, the Gemara Maseches Pesachim, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, identifies someone who doesn't get angry as someone, among a few others, who Kadosh Baruch Hu loves. And Noach is described as beloved by God, so that fits. You find that in the Musaf for Rosh Hashanah, he's described that way. So perhaps that's what's going on, and there are a number of essays in the Sfarim that focus on this aspect of Noah, that he was somebody who avoided getting angry, somebody who didn't lose his temper. And in fact, where do you find that hinted at? It's his name, right? You know, what does Noah mean? His calmness, that he's got composure, that he's not somebody who's running around screaming. So what do we say about somebody who doesn't lose his temper? So on the one hand, that's very, very praiseworthy. And on the one hand, that's something that is very good. Kas is subject to a lot of criticism in the halachic literature, and it may even be an isser. It's an interesting topic to explore. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to do that someday. The kas may be an actual avera. And the Rambam, most prominently in Hilchos Deos, the Rambam identifies kas as one of two midos that, in contrast to everything else, where you're supposed to have a middle path, kas you have to avoid completely. You have to be totally separated from kas. So, from that perspective, okay, Noah's a hero. He's not subject to kas, that's good. But there's another angle to consider, which is that when someone has no passion, has no righteous indignation, so they're never going to be motivated to do anything. Sometimes you need a little fire so that if you see injustice, you see immoral behavior, you see things happening that shouldn't be, so you feel like you're pushed to do something. So it seems like there is a need for some degree of balance. And when we talk about balance here, looking first at this tremendous exhortation not to lose your temper, and on the other hand, the consequences of somebody who doesn't have any kind of push in this way, perhaps if you look for moderation, not necessarily a question of degree, but look at it as a process. The Gemara Maseches Tainis in Daf Dalet talks about Talmud Chacham. It says, "Hai Talmud Chacham derasach, I raisehu dekarasach." That if you have a Talmud Chacham who gets angry, it's the Torah that makes him angry. What does that mean? It means he was staying up too late in the Beis Medrash, so he's all irritable now the next day. So the Torah made him angry. So we saw what that meant. Is that the Torah makes someone sensitive to detail and to nuance. If you don't notice anything, so nothing's going to bother you. But if you do notice things, if you're paying attention to the details around you, so then they can upset you. They can get you worked up. But the Gemara there goes on to say that Afa Pikein, even though that's the case, that he's motivated to get angry because of his learning, we still tell him to calm down. It's still proper that he should train himself to behave benachas, that he should behave in a calm way. So there's kind of a process here. There is the instinct to get upset, which could come from a good place and may reflect itself a moral sensitivity and passion. And yet, practically speaking, we still say you have to maintain your self-control. Now that, as a position of balance, if you think again about Moshe, about Noah, so there's yet another comment we haven't even mentioned yet, where Chazal knocked down Noah and read into him something negative, and here they point to what it is. That here you think Noah is the one guy in the world, the one guy in the planet who has some kind of faith, who cares about God. And yet Chazal say, Rashi quotes this idea, which is actually stronger in the Medrash, that Af Noach Miktani Amuna, that even Noach was among those who were not so strong in Amuna. How could that be? Here he spent all these years making an ark on God's command, it sounds like his emuna is pretty stark. So where do you see any indication that his emuna is lacking? So the language of the pasuk that is picked up on here is that Noach goes into the teva mipnei mehamabul. And it sounds like, oh, it's raining, I guess it must be true. That until then, as if he wasn't sure. So, whether that's the focus or not, maybe there's a broader statement here. It sounds like we call him a mechusar emuna because his faith in God didn't seem to be 100%. He needed some kind of visual proof, tactile proof that something was actually happening. But maybe this also has to do with his attitude towards himself. And that maybe when we talk about trying to find the balance, we're talking about this issue of kas and the need to occupy a very specific sweet spot on the spectrum, perhaps emuna is a very important component to that. Talking about Noach as somebody who lacks emuna, maybe this ties into the original mixed assessment of Noach, Yesh Darshim Mishvach, Yesh Darshim Mignai. So the idea of Noach being only great in a relative sense, so perhaps what that reflects is that Noach didn't really have confidence in himself. He didn't really have faith in himself. And the Zohar implies that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Noah that I have seen you to be the tzaddik in this generation, that that was essentially a hint to him. You know, hello, you're the one who can make a difference here. Get up and do something. It wasn't necessarily stam praise. And there was a hint here that Noah was missing because he didn't really believe in himself. This is the way the Kedushas Levi, Levi Yitzchak, or Bedichev understands the idea of Miktanei Emunah, that he didn't have faith in what he could accomplish. Rabbi Simon Shlita has an essay about this in his Sefer on Noach, about this idea of, Sefer on Bereishis and Parshas Noach, this idea of Miktanei Emunah, meaning you don't fully believe in what you can accomplish. And we can consider another point here also, that so Noach maybe was on the wrong end of the balance in terms of not enough anger. The other extreme, which is certainly bad, which Noach is not accused of, is somebody who completely loses his temper. And it's interesting to note that the Gemara draws a parallel between one who loses his temper and an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. It's a Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Hei. So, what exactly does one have to do with the other? It doesn't sound like losing your temper is literally an act of Avodah Zarah. A person who does so is not the Chayv Misa. But there's some basis for comparison. So, what is that? Why is losing your temper compared to Avodah Zarah? So, the usual explanation they give is you're giving yourself over to the control of an alien force. Somebody who loses his temper is not in control, is not able to make rational decisions, so it's ki'ilu, he's worshipping this alien god who has taken over him. But maybe there's another comparison to be drawn here. The idea of Avodah Zarah and Kas, and you're completely throwing your hands up in rage. Maybe that's saying that when one reaches the point where he just thinks it's hopeless, that there's nothing to do but just to scream and to shout and to break things, so that represents a lack of faith in God. Ultimately, if God is running the world, so things can be disappointing and depressing, but really give up and start breaking things, that's essentially saying you don't have faith that God is running the world. So how do you put yourself at the right point in the anger equilibrium here? This idea that you're supposed to be a little bit angry, but not too angry. Where do you look to for guidance on that? Seems that it has to do with these two types of emunah. But on the one hand, you have to have enough emuna in yourself that you can make a difference and that it's worth getting motivated and feeling that indignation. On the other hand, you also have to have enough faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to know that it's not all up to you. And that it's not worth throwing your hands up and giving up. This is kind of in the same sense as the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, that lo alecha hamlocha ligmor, lo ata ben chorin libatam imeno. You have your responsibility. It's not your job to save the world. It's not your job to do everything. But that doesn't mean that therefore you don't have to do anything. That you do your part, and you recognize that ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, and finding the balance between those two attitudes, that's what's crucial here. So essentially, what emerges from this whole discussion is somewhat of a criticism of Noach, that Noach didn't totally rise to the occasion. That's no pun intended again there also, with all of what that generation needed. And maybe that's what's conveyed towards the end of the parsha, and this is going to bring us back to the Haftorah in a major way. That ultimately, after the flood, so we have the rainbow. And Rav Meir Shapiro, most famous as the founder of Daf Yomi, the Berliner Rav, the Rav Meir Shapiro suggests that the imagery of the rainbow is a rebuke to Noach. That here, Noach didn't really believe that he could get good out of bad, that he could change people's approaches and turn them around. And here you find that after a storm, which is all darkness and destruction, you can have all the beautiful colors of the rainbow. So maybe there was more potential in the souls of his contemporaries as well. And maybe that was something that he should have had more faith in. And perhaps that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is committing himself to. And he says, okay, from here on things are going to be different. I'm not going to do this again. So he's saying that the Dor HaMabul had to be wiped out. But it also wasn't totally their fault. There wasn't anybody to really show them a way. There wasn't any shining light. So, what happened, happened. But now, on the horizon, there's Avraham Avinu. Right? And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos suggests that the world only lasts from one to the other, from the point of Noach to Avram, because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's patience. So when you have an Avram, so he is going to show the path. He is going to teach the world how to be. And the future is much more hopeful. And you find some Sfarim point out that there is this shift in the language, that first we read that the Yetzer of Adam in Bereishis is rak rak kol hayom, is just bad. But after the Mabul, it's Ra min Urav. It's bad from his youth. It starts off bad. But the impression it's created is that things can get better. And that is perhaps the message of the Haftorah. As we said before, the Haftorah, we remember from the recent weeks, it was read over the summer. It's part of the Shiva D'Nechemta, both two parts of the Shiva D'Nechemta. It has an upbeat kind of tone, has an upbeat message, hopeful for the future. And that's where Menoach is invoked. That just like God says, I made a commitment then, I'm going to make a commitment now. But what the Gemara makes clear in Masach HaShavuos, in Daf Lamed Vav, Mun Aleph, is that this is really the Iker commitment. So again, the Haftorah plays a very important role in appreciating the Parsha. That this is where God really says, I'm with you. And the pasuk, the next pasuk, following the Menoach pasuk, it continues, Ki haharim yamushu, v'agvoz tmutena, v'chasti me'itach lo yamush, v'vris shlomi lo samut, amar merachamei Hashem. The mountains might move and the hills might shake, but my loyalty is never going to move from you. And my bris shalom is never going to be shaken. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says from Rachmanis, from love, really. So that, the Gemara says, that's really the Iker Shavua here. And in fact, the Gemara in Bava Basra, in an unusual context, in the Agadic sections in Bava Basra and Fayin Dalit, the Gemara suggests that this first Shavua that's in the Parsha, that maybe could have been canceled. And the Malbim offers that maybe the intent of the Haftorah is to tell us that even if that original commitment from the Parsha had been canceled, like that Gemara suggests was possible, this commitment that God says to the Jewish people in the Haftorah, that's not going to be ever changed. That's not going to be breakable. So what's the difference from one to the other? Why is it that the one in the Parsha, apparently that could have been undone, and the one in the Haftorah not? There's a discussion about this in the Sefer Chavetz Hasharon al Torah, where he notes that we have an idea that a commitment that a Navi transmits, if it's a positive commitment, it can't ever be undone. A negative statement, if a Navi tells us that God is going to destroy something or is going to be some kind of an onesh, Rahman al-Islam, so that could change because the people could do tshuva. But a positive commitment, that never changes. So the Rambam understands in Mar Nevuchim and in Mishneh Torah that is because the positive commitment, that's how we test if the Navi is a true Navi. He has to be able to make predictions that come true. So if he makes negative predictions that don't come true, we could always say, well, maybe we did tshuva, so that's why they didn't come true. So we need some standard that's going to be consistent. So therefore, it seems that it's specifically these commitments that are relayed to the people from the Navi. So what we read about in the Parsha is not conveyed to the people. In fact, the Ramban, if you look there in Chumash, the Ramban seems to say that nobody heard God say this. It was just something God said to himself. It wasn't a promise to an individual or to the nation or to the world. But this, in the Haftorah, that's the actual commitment. And that reflects the fact that now we have role models, we have leadership, and that's what's going to take us to the future. And we have this rock-solid commitment from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to be there with us. So the Haftorah really has a lot to tell us about how to understand the Parsha, and maybe how to understand how Chazal related to the Parsha. And I just want to add and connect. We don't have to assume that Noach was completely static, that if there was something lacking before, that it stayed that way forever. And there are indications that afterwards, what we call in English the post-diluvian world, that Noach did have more of an appreciation for this. And the Rashiva of Keren B'Yavna, Rav Golvich, Zichrono Livracha, in one of his essays on Parshas Noach, has a fascinating discussion where he talks about, the Rashiva always talked about the yeshiva as a teva, as the protective structure that helps us to survive through all the forces of the world. But he had a particular approach towards the actual teva of Noach and seeing that as a base medrash. And he notes that there is an attitude you find in a couple of sources in Chazal. He discusses the various indications that this is the case. But perhaps one of the most striking is that the Medrash says that Malki Tzedek met Shem, the son of Noach, and he said to him, by what schus did you have that you left the Teva? It's a funny question, right? What do you mean a schus to leave the Teva? Wasn't the whole point of the Teva to protect them and save them from the flood? So if they weren't going to escape the Teva, if they weren't going to leave the Teva, then what was the point? You need a schus to come out of the Teva? So if you look at the answer, Shem says, he says it was the stucca of Noach. Medrash goes on. Staka, there were poor people on the teva. What does that mean? That staka of Noach. Medrash says, no, it weren't poor people, but there were animals that had to be taken care of. And Noach, as we know, spent all of that time in a very demanding shift together with his family of taking care of all the animals. And we're told that at one point he was a little bit late. Once out of all this time, he was a little bit late, and he got injured by the lion. It was a pretty intense program. So that, essentially, as the Rosh Yeshiva understood, said that was a base medrash of chesed. That here, Noach, it wasn't like the rest of his generation that he was trying to steal from people. He wasn't trying to get stuff from others. But he wasn't very generous either. He wasn't very giving, apparently. He didn't feel this concern for everyone else. So to have to practice this way, to have to spend all this time taking care of all the animals with such attention, that was a training ground for a new kind of future. And so when the question is asked, how do you have this chus to leave the teva? How did you graduate, essentially? How did you make it to the next level? Because you were focusing on this midas hachesed, this midas hanasino, this ability to give, which to a certain extent had been lacking. So it was that process that prepares Noach and his family for the next stage, for a new world where we hope for a different attitude and a different involvement. So there's a lot to learn from this Haftorah, a lot to learn from the parasha together with the Haftorah. Maybe we'll just make one more comment, and then we'll daven. One more comment is a very recognizable line here also. You would recognize this line even if you're not familiar with Nach, and you didn't hear the Haftorah recently, and you didn't hear it this Shabbos. You'd hear it anyway, because it's the end of four Masechtas. So, since you all know Shas, so you know that. And also, you go to Shul Friday night, so you hear this Pasuk quoted as well. So, it's a very prominently quoted Pasuk. V'chol bonayich l'mudei Hashem, v'rav shalom bonayich. So, we know that the Gemara in the four places ends off by saying that Talmidei Chachamim marvim shalom ba'olam. Sh'ne'amar v'rav shalom bonayich, al tikri bonayich ala bonayich. So Talmidei Chachamim marv shalom in the world. And there are a number of people who have been attributed with the quip, who have been said to have commented that this is proof that there are jokes in the Talmud. Really, Talmidei Chachamim marv shalom, there's so much machlokes, so much fighting. Is that really true? And Rav Kook, in one of his comments at the end of Brachos, Rav Kook writes, Blachman is very fond of quoting this line, I heard this from him many times, that Rav Kook understood that when the Talmud says that Talmidei Chachamim marvim shalom ba'olam, what it means is that Talmidei Chachamim teach us that there are many different types of shalom, that it's possible to coexist and to flourish with many different perspectives and many different attitudes, and that that's what the shalom is. And essentially, as we look towards a world after the flood, and we look towards a world that's built on chesed, so it's also built on shalom. And this phrase, such a recognizable, prominent phrase embedded within our Haftorah, perhaps also helps to evoke that and to remind us of that message also. So I wish all of us a very inspiring Parshas Noach. It should help to connect us, to remind us of these themes of achrayus for everyone around us, for the responsibility that we have towards everyone else, to try to make sure that we care about them, to make sure that we give to people, that we are compassionate and passionate, and that we are able to use all of these powers of influence in the most positive way. Shabbos, would you like to daven for us?